This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels. Welcome to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. In the January issue of The Scientist, we feature an investigative report on hypoallergenic cats. A California company called Allerca claims to have bred the world's first scientifically proven hypoallergenic cat. And it's currently taking deposits for these $4,000 pets. But staff writer Carrie Grins reveals that the company's shady past and questionable data make for a lot of doubts in the allergy world about the authenticity of these cats. This week in our podcast, Grins speaks with Martin Chapman, an Allerca skeptic and the founder of Indoor Biotechnologies, an allergy test company.
To not have some form of independent scientific validation is certainly a cause for concern.
But first, The Scientist's Andrea Garleski has these updates from The Scientist Daily News.
The vaccine against chikungunya virus has finally reached safety trials in France after the U.S. Army dropped the development of a vaccine a decade ago. Claire Kittredge reports on thescientist.com that countries on the Indian Ocean are experiencing the largest recorded outbreak of the mosquito-borne virus. The French are using the vaccine strain first developed by the U.S., and if no contaminants or prions are discovered, clinical trials could begin in the fall. The Army stopped work on the vaccine because of a lack of a commercial partner, changes in budget priorities, and the fickle nature of the virus, said Colonel David Vaughn, the outgoing director of the Military Infectious Diseases Research Program. Antoine Flotte, head of France's Chikungunya Research Task Force, said the work by the U.S. Army will save the French 5 years. He added, quote, "The Americans were very lucky to discover a promising vaccine strain. If all goes well, the commercial vaccine will be available in 5 years." The latest chikungunya outbreak leapt from Africa to India and has infected about 1.5 million Indians. The disease causes debilitating joint pain, fever, and arthritis. Also in The Scientist Daily News, Carrie Grenz reports on a new gene associated with Alzheimer's disease. 24 other genes have been implicated in the past, and scientists are curious whether this gene, SORL1, is any different. SORL1 is a receptor involved in recycling amyloid precursor proteins. With the exception of APOE, the other genes associated with Alzheimer's have not had consistent replication in subsequent studies. Lindsay Fair, the chief of the genetics program at Boston University and one of the study's chief investigators, says SORL1 looks like it might be different from the others.
We believe our findings are a bit more robust genetically and statistically when we see independently confirmed associations across data sets, and we're heartened when we see it in very diverse, and I mean genetically as well as culturally diverse groups.
Still, an analysis by Rudolf Tanzi at Massachusetts General Hospital shows SORL1 adds only a small amount of risk to developing Alzheimer's disease. Ferrer said his colleagues are awaiting independent replication of their study, and they will next look for the SORL1 mutants responsible for the elevated risk.
Next, we hear about reasons to question the promise of a hypoallergenic cat being sold by a California company called Allerca. Staff writer Carrie Grins interviews Martin Chapman, the founder of an allergy test company called Indoor Biotechnologies. Chapman has done research on FEL-D1, the major cat allergen, for years, and he says Allerca's data just don't seem to add up.
How did you hear about hypoallergenic cats, and what was your reaction?
I think I first heard about it either on the web or through some form of publicity a couple of years ago, and then I followed up by looking at the website. There was a lot of interest, always has been a lot of interest in trying to identify cats that didn't produce the allergen, and I think a couple of years ago there was renewed interest because of the approach by David Avner and the Allerca company seemed to be formed around the same time. So it just sort of, came out at the same time.
So there's a lot of excitement about it, but it seems like maybe it's overhyped or something. What made you kind of skeptical about Allerka's claim?
Well, I think the fact is that, you know, after a couple of years, first of all, I think the first thing that made me skeptical was that the data on the website didn't seem to match what we know about FLD1, about how it should react, particularly on immunoblotting. I think the other situation was that the company's made a lot of claims in the media, in television and electronically, and also in published media, about these animals, but there's been no independent scientific validation that these cats are indeed hypoallergenic by, you know, an established academic research group, for example. I think the other thing is that the claims that the company makes seem to be a little bit confused. You know, are they producing, are these animals cats that lack the gene for FLD1, or are they animals that produce a gene that is a variant form of FLD1 that humans don't react to? That's a little bit unclear. And I think given that they've had a couple of years now or more to produce these animals and to get this data together, to not have some form of independent scientific validation is certainly a cause for concern.
And what I've heard from people that is that being able to breed hypoallergenic cats and finding a mutated gene such that it doesn't elicit an immune response would be a fairly large finding. We could learn a lot about the way the allergen works.
Yeah, no, it would be very interesting. I think this is the tantalizing issue about Allerka, is that if the findings are correct and they do have hypoallergenic cats, then from the perspective of looking at the biology of FLD1, this could be very important. And, you know, a lot of the academics out there would probably be green with envy to have such an animal. Because it would allow us to try and relate the changes in the gene to changes in the structure of the molecule, and that could be, you know, a very important biological and immunological finding.
And there has been a modicum of evidence that Allerka has released. The founder of the company, Simon Brody, sent me an abstract from a company called Microbac, that did some genetic testing on samples that Allerka sent to Microbac. And the abstract is on our website if you want to read it there, but I also sent it to you, and I'm curious, what did you make of it?
Well, you know, the abstract outlines what the company did, what Microbac did, which seems to be a good approach in terms of analyzing the gene. They didn't find any differences in the structure of chain 1, which is consistent with data in the literature. They did report differences in chain 2, and there are known polymorphisms in the structure of chain 2, which have been published. And so the question is, what are those differences between the Allerka cats and standard cats, which they describe? And obviously those are, well, not obviously, but those are not described in the report, and that is information which is really critical to establishing whether that's important. So there was no specific information provided about the number of mutations, the nature of the mutations. And, you know, even though those mutations occur in the gene, you know, it still has to be established that those, the expressed protein produced by those cats, you know, has a different structure. It's kind of interesting because when the genomic structure of FLD1 was determined, there was an unusual form of FLD1 that they detected at the same time, which had a frame shift mutation in it, which led to a protein that was a chain that was 78 amino acids long and lacked an important cysteine residue. Now, these cats that they studied at that time also, you know, produced other forms of FLD1, but obviously if there were mutations in cysteine residues, those could significantly affect the structure and may be responsible for a lack of binding, for example, to antibodies. But again, you know, unfortunately, we don't know whether those are the changes that were observed or, you know, how that protein is expressed in the Allerka cats.
Do you know what happened with those cats that had the gene with the disrupted cysteine?
No. I mean, these were just, I think the original studies were done on one or two cats. Those studies did document differences between long forms and short forms of chain 2. I mean, they were called long forms and short forms, but they really only differed in two amino acids. And two amino acids normally would not affect the reactivity with polyclonal IgE antibodies. But certainly, you know, a level of polymorphism in chain 2 was established by the original gene sequencing. But any immunological significance hasn't really been looked at. And, you know, for example, if you make monoclonal antibodies to FLD1 in mice, and this is making them to natural FLD1, you get antibodies to chain 1 and to chain 2. And one can assume that humans will make reactions to both of those molecules, either of which would be sufficient to trigger mast cells and to cause allergic reactions.
So does it even seem feasible that if they had some changes in chain 2 that could prevent an allergic response in humans over the course of a lifetime?
I wouldn't like to rule anything out at this stage because, you know, you would really just like to actually have more information about, you know, the particular protein that or form of FLD1 that a lurker is working with. And I should say that I know the company has expressed concerns about making this information available, but in fact, which was highlighted in your article, but in fact, they don't actually, you know, they have patents pending, at least according to their website, on the what intellectual property they've developed. And you could do this, you know, they could work with in conjunction with an academic lab under a confidentiality agreement such that they don't even need to reveal necessarily the specific information about the mutations, but just provide the FLD1 that could then be analyzed for its reactivity with IgE in different experimental systems. So I think that, you know, it would be possible to study the mutant protein or the hypoallergenic cats without compromising their intellectual property in any way.
There have been other attempts to produce cats that are either low or absent in the allergen. You mentioned before David Abner's work in looking at knockout cats who don't have FLD1. What do you think is a good approach to getting rid of allergies? Do you think it's targeting the source or the recipient? Or?
Well, certainly I think that if one could generate hypoallergenic cats or knockout cats that lack the gene for FLD1, they would be very useful in studying the biology of the allergen in the same way that investigators of, you know, that I mentioned earlier have generated uteroglobin knockout mice and have then been able to speculate about the function of that particular protein. In terms of people with pet allergies, obviously reducing environmental exposure is only one approach, and it's also an approach that is, at the moment is quite controversial. You know, the idea was that if you reduce exposure to FLD1, people will have less symptoms, and that's certainly true. But there's another significant body of evidence that if people grow up with cats from birth and are exposed to relatively high levels of FLD1, that they are protected against the effects of cat allergen, and fewer of them develop cat allergy. So they develop a form of immunological tolerance as a result of this high-level exposure. And if that's true, then what it points to is the fact that that approach may be relevant in terms of vaccination and developing better allergy vaccines for cat. And they may involve, for example, producing recombinant FLD1, and developing some vaccination strategies that could be used very early in life by giving high-dose exposure in much the same way that you immunize against diphtheria and tetanus toxoid.
And then just to wrap up here then, what do you think should happen at this point? What is this company, you know, what are their obligations to consumers or to the scientific world? Do they have any?
Well, I think they do. I think, first of all, you know, the obligations to consumers are that if the consumers are spending $4,000 or $6,000 to buy these cats, they ought to be provided with evidence that the cats indeed are hypoallergenic. I think that is, would be possible. I think, you know, most biotechnologies validate their products by conducting independent studies with academic labs and research institutes. And this would be obviously something that one would want to see with the hypoallergenic cats. I think one would particularly need to look at the gene structure in these animals, at the IgE reactivity in a large number of cat allergic patients, because, you know, the hypoallergenic cat, it's no good if it works for one patient. There need to be fairly large population studies looking at sera from many different cat allergic patients. And also, I think one would need to look at the levels of FeLD1 production in these cats as well. Are they producing similar levels to normal cats, albeit of the variant, or do they produce lower levels? So there are all sorts of scientific questions surrounding these animals, which I think the company ought to, you know, make more serious efforts to resolve, certainly before offering these animals for sale to the public.
And finally, at this point, do you believe that these cats exist as Allerka claims them to?
Well, I believe that they have some cats. Whether or not they are hypoallergenic or not, I think that's still on the table.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us, Dr. Chapman.
Thank you, Carrie. It's been a pleasure.
You can read Carrie Grin's feature on Allerka and hypoallergenic cats on our website, thescientist.com. You can also find web extras, including a slideshow from Grin's investigative report and the evidence Allerka has released to the public. We also have daily updates from the Scientist Daily News, blogs from our editors, and space for your comments. Thanks for tuning in to The Week. This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.